My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's the Super J Casts.
Hello, this is Editor Dan. Look, I took the time last week to add Joel's song at the start, Mortal Kombat, because it was great, but I'm not bothering this week. Enjoy it.
Wow. With Joel and David McDonald, it is Tuesday, 11th of February, 2025. This is episode 349. We're so fucking back, Damon. The Eagles won the Super Bowl and got to. Yes, the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion.
Yes. Fuck yes. Yes. Oh.
So fucking back. Again!
We've returned again.
I physically cannot handle this level of being back.
Yeah.
We've been on a continual stream of being back, but this is too back. I don't know what to do with myself.
We're so back, we're forward, or something, I don't know. But, yeah, I'm telling you what, man. What a fucking week it's been for all Damon here. Birthday celebration, which was wonderful.
Happy fucking birthday! Yeah!
Yes! We're back! Pretty soon I'll be collecting Social Security! Woo! I'll be eating dinner at 3 o'clock! and I'll have to pee frequently! Yes. So that was awesome. Then, of course, fucking Eagles, man. They went out there and took a belt to Kansas City's ass. Took a belt to their ass. And then we'll have a little parade on Friday. I'll be there at Broad and Walnut, high above, looking over all the peasants. my kingdom, I'll be there, waving on for the parade. And then to put the little icing, little cherry on the cake. What a fucking show that was. What a show that was last night. Oh, well, listen, things are good. Things are good. I can't complain at all. And I know you're fucking pumped up, and I know that it's kind of like you put it out in the universe, and you made things happen. I think collectively everyone was on the Joel train, if you will. The soul Joel train, if you will.
Anyway. We manifested this, didn't we, Damon? With our positive thinking.
I feel like it's you. You started it.
It was me, yeah.
You really do.
I don't know why Fraser on the Discord for some reason thinks I said Zach was going to win. Lies. No, I got the receipts.
I probably said I did.
I've been riding this Gotto train since, it feels like a long time now. And now it's right up there with the biggest dubs. And it feels good.
It really does. It's
delicious in my mouth.
It really does. No, if my memory serves me right, yeah, we were talking about the match, and you know, it was a few weeks ago, and you brought it to the table of what do you think of this? And then the anniversary show with, you know, like all of it, right? And even I was like, you know, that'd be nice, but I don't think it's happening. Blah blah blah. And then you kept going with it, and then next week,
yeah, I won you round with my mania.
Did. Yes, you did, which you normally do. Yes, you brought me over. And I got pumped for it. And let me ask you this. When was the last time this company has delivered on a want? In other words, you're kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if this fucking happened? Wouldn't that be just a moment? But, this company doesn't do things like that. And then they fucking did it. What a great. All right. Anyway, we're going to get into it. But, yeah, we're riding high. We're feeling good. Feelings are good. I can't complain about a fucking thing. Like, I can, because that's me. But, yes, feeling good, and I think spirits are high.
And not only that, the proper English results page for the New Japan website is back up.
Fuck yeah.
So I'm looking at the results. I've got the names of the finishing moves. Boy. I've got how long the match has lasted. I've got who pinned whom, who defeated whom. This is, we're just back to the glory days, Damon.
I'm telling you. You know who you had to thank for this?
Walker Stewart.
Well, I mean, if you want. I was going to go even worse. And I'm not saying that Walker's bad. I'm
Michael Craven?
I was going to say like some presidential election or something.
It's Tony Khan, isn't it?
We need to
give him his shoes. Give him his flowers.
Yes. By the way, I know we'll get into it. I thought Walker did a good job. A really good job. Great job. I enjoyed.
Great. He was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I thought he did like maybe his best show. And I didn't mind Clark Connors at all.
He was very, very good as well. Yeah.
And I didn't mind the F-bombs. Because again, he's not a commentator, and why should he have? But even like him being in the faction that he's in, I thought there were times where he was just like breaking things down and everything, like why this guy, you know, I thought he added a decent amount. I'm sure they weren't pleased with all the F bombs that he threw out, but it didn't bother me that much. All right, we're going to. I don't want to take us off track. You have a definite course. Let's take that course, get behind the wheel, and take us on a ride.
Oh, man, this gets better and better. Australian Liam has come back to the Discord.
Oh!
Brought back from all the wonderful things happening in New Japan. It's just like, it's one big party.
Holy shit.
Over there on the Discord.
Let's go. Let's fucking go. Everybody, listen, I had people texting me, like, I saw this, and I was like, so here's my day. I woke up, knew it was on, popped it on first thing, didn't even pick up the phone, I didn't even get out of bed before I put it on, watched. And then I would say probably like around, I guess people were waking up, maybe they saw results, maybe whatever. Then I got a couple texts. And I was like, look, here's what I'm going to lead with. If you don't mind, I'm going to lead with this. For those people who, and why would you be listening to this show if you know, I'm preaching to the choir, but like if you missed the days of, I want that banger main event and I want that that thing that brought me to New Japan Pro Wrestling back, you know, in 17 or 16 or whatever the fuck you hopped on board. What I've good news.
And can I say banger main events that get their business done in 20 minutes, not this sort of drawn out 45 minute fucking nonsense right. That we all pretended was good.
Right. We have two guys that are in, not even in the prime of their careers, that had a match that I promise you, if you pop that on and you don't get the feels, and it doesn't take you back and make you feel like, oh, this is something I can get into again. I don't know what to tell you, because that match between Gabe and Tsuji was it. And I tell you what, I was just thrilled because I sat here and I even threw out like a little rhetorical, not even a rhetorical question. That's not the word. But a what if question to you of like, hey, is Gabe just kind of like a brawler? And but nah, he's not just. Don't get that in your head. Don't get it in your head. This match,
I'm gonna have to go back and listen to last week's pod and just bask in how right we/I was about everything.
Well, I think you should. Number one, and number two, I was, and this is even before the main event. I was grinning from ear to ear because I knew that while every time we bring people up through the dojo system, and it's always a little bit of a, okay, let's see what he can do. And not everyone makes it. Not everyone has the projections that maybe we have in the beginning, or whatever the case may be. I know we have two studs. I know we have two fucking studs that can go and we can build around and we can have a feud now and forevermore. Like, I was just tickled pink by that semi-main. The finish was, again, something that we discussed that I, once again, did not think was a possibility, but okay. And
is that another thing I was right about, Damon? I'm losing count here.
You really are. You should be. I don't have enough fingers. I have to take off my shoes to count them all. But yes, there's something here in New Japan Pro Wrestling that I think everyone, one, should watch that match if you haven't. And you know, again, if you're listening to this, I would assume that you did. Two, it's got to make you feel pretty good to know that what we have, and it's only going to get better with those two. And then we had a main event that was pro wrestling, all the feels, everything that you would want and more. And then, you turn off that show and you're just like, whew, way to go. You did it. You did a good job, guys. You did a fucking good job.
And great attendance as well. It's 5,502, which is up very slightly, for about 180 up from last year, which featured the final Kazuchika Okada singles match and the Dog Pound Steel Cage match. So whilst there were a lot of title matches, like the top three singles titles being defended on this show, still, to bounce back from that, I think this is just a mission statement. This is what the fans want. This sort of card where we've got great long-term storytelling. We've got the young up-and-comers put in exciting spots. This is what New Japan should be in 2025. So I hope this is the blueprint for just everything going forward. Just more of this, please.
Yep. I don't think anybody's complaining.
I do every show in Osaka. Every show in the Edion Arena, please.
Yeah, I would agree. That is no wonder Dragon Gate made that a fucking home base. Look, it's all right. Again, we'll get into it into more detail, but I think overall, I early contender for show of the year. Were there things that missed? Of course, yes, there were. Were there things that I wish didn't happen that did? Yes, but overall, I'm very happy with what I saw. I think everyone is, and this is, I don't think this is any, I heard somebody say, I didn't hear, I saw somebody say, like it was almost like a step backwards or something like that, giving, and I was like, well, this is not,
fuck off.
Right. I mean, like, just enjoy this. This does not mean that he's holding this for a year or by any stretch. This was a pro wrestling, give the people what they want. And they did. And you saw how they reacted. You saw how they fucking lost their mind.
If anyone's coming out of this show complaining, saying, oh, you know, they've belted up an old guy, this is terrible.
Get up the street.
Right. You can, yes.
Just get up the street. Yeah, I agree. All right, take us away.
Kickoff match. I didn't see it.
I did.
Katsuya Murashima and El Desperado losing to Jeff Cobb and Francesco Acura. So Acura, I believe, pinned Despy after 8 minutes 20 seconds with a roll-up.
Yes, correct. It wasn't a bad match, but it was built. It's funny how they have these kind of matches to set up title defenses and stuff like that. again, Challenger getting the win just to show that he can beat them. But they do clear the ring out for them to give them ample time to make sure that's the focus of the match. I was a little bit surprised by the fact that Despy was the guy lying down, because it was, you know, it was all mapped out for him not to. But they had some balls, had some fucking onions, and said, all right, let's have the Challenger really feel credible. Get a pin. I had no problem. I thought the match was fine. I thought Jeff was fine. Despy was – everybody was good. Everybody was fine. And it accomplished what it needed to in an opening match of, okay, let's make the Challenger even more of a threat. So I did like the finish.
The first match was Hiroshi Tanahashi, Final Road, Kinship. Okay. Hiroshi Tanahashi defeating Togi Makabe, 9 minutes, 24 seconds with an O'Connor roll. So halfway through this, I was like, holy shit, they still got it. Makabe is bumping hard. He's doing bridges. His back can still bend that way. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, wow, this is really great. I'm enjoying this so much. And then it all went to shit. And I was just laughing my head off. It was extremely entertaining and kind of romantic in a way, with these two old fucking meatheads thinking that they can still do all these intricate, complex sequences, which they clearly can't, but they gave it a go anyway. There was a moment where I thought, you know, they might have gotten away with it if they hadn't immediately gone back to it. Like that O'Connor bridge spot. Oh, my God. And I just ended this thinking, worrying, like, how is Hiroshi Tanahashi going to do an entire year of this? Because it's February and he looks absolutely cooked already. But I enjoyed it. It was very funny, but not good.
Yeah, look, it was a masterclass in father time catching up with people. Togi Makabe looked like he aged about at least 10 years since the last time I feel like I saw him. Hiroshi Tanahashi can barely fucking walk. I mean, there were times where he's like trying to make it look like there's speed behind anything that he's doing, like getting whipped into the fucking guardrails or even into the ropes, mind you. Again, shot. But I don't want to give it an excuse, but like, I don't think anybody was sitting here saying, okay, this is going to be, Hiroshi Tanahashi 10 years ago, right? I'm going to sit here and tell you, I don't know how it's going to work. I would assume we're going to see a lot of tag matches. I would assume that if we do see singles matches, they might even be laid out differently than what we saw. I don't want to see them. Joel, when he tried to, you know, how he sets up the high fly flow and he kind of, does his little hop over the rope. Then he climbs up the turn. He couldn't even get over the fucking rope. Like, it was like, oh boy. And that was one of many where you're like, oh, be careful. There was one spot where I think it was the power slam spot from Makabe, where, I mean, Hiroshi Tanahashi is just like a fucking wet bag of sand. And he didn't get fully rotate over. And it looked like he landed on the back of his head and neck. And I was like, oh, geez. This is not good. And when I say not good, like not like, oh, this is not five-star pro wrestling. More of, I don't want anybody to get fucking hurt here. You know? So I think they just need to reassess, if they haven't already, the fact that A, singles matches need to be short. B, they can't be structured in a way where we're climbing ropes and hitting high fly flows and shit. I truly just don't want to see people get fucking hurt. And let's keep it on the ground and find creative ways to get from point A to point B. But I just, if you just parachuted into New Japan land, and that was like your first exposure to Hiroshi Tanahashi, I could see where people would be like, this guy's a legend, but it's father time. And I feel bad because you can't avoid it. And you see his mind wanting to do things that his body just fucking can't do anymore. And that's sad. I mean, that realization is sad. But again, I'm trying to take these Tanahashi matches all year as just little celebrations, little pockets, but I just don't want to see the fucking guy get hurt before this happens.
yeah, I think we all need to manage our expectations for what the output looks like in terms of stars.
Yeah.
So we're riding on the vibes, and I look forward to seeing Tanahashi disregard all conventional wisdom and do foolish moves that his body can no longer execute.
We'll
enjoy that.
All right. I mean, look, it was what it was. It was a fine nostalgic match, but boy, I was just like, please, please, people get out of the ring before you get hurt. Please.
Second match was a special singles match where Driller Maloney got a big win over Shingo Takagi. 10 minutes, 40 seconds with the Driller Killer. A lot of questions going into this.
Yeah.
I was unsure whether Driller Maloney was actually any good as a singles wrestler. And they definitely put him in the best possible spot here against a top quality opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Like Driller he's got the size and the muscles where he looks like he should have all these sort of high pace, high intensity, explosive power sequences. But he hasn't had that up to this point. But I'd still green shoots of it here. And I thought Shingo did a really good job in making Driller look like the killer that he should be. Because like, the aesthetic is great. I like his look. I like his mic work. I quite like his entrance theme. I know that seems to be a bit of a controversial take. But the matches haven't quite lived up to that. But after coming away from this, I was pleasantly surprised with this. So I was thinking, yeah, if this is a guy we are looking to elevate to, you know, I wouldn't know if I put him in sort of the top 20 heavyweights, if that's a guy I'm looking at saying, yeah, definitely he's ready for the G1. But a guy sort of on the bench there, if, you know, other guys get injured or something, I could see that. And I think it's just a question of giving him more reps, you know, putting him in more spots like this against top quality opposition where he can learn and develop his cardio and his moveset and just basically learn, because he's still relatively inexperienced compared to a lot of the other guys from the New Japan roster. But I thought this was a really encouraging start.
Yeah. I thought the match was good. Again, when you're in there with Shingo, it's a good dance partner to have. I agree with you. I think he has a solid look, right? He has, and I have zero problem with his in-ring ability. Like I don't think he's like he's more than capable of having a good match. So there's that. I think the one thing that I haven't seen quite yet from him, and there's a very good possibility this could be developed, but it's the most difficult thing to be developed, and that's kind of finding him and finding, like, I don't want to necessarily say a motivation, mind you, but like he feels a little generic, right? He feels like he could easily slip into just generic good body mid-card guy.
Chris Masters.
Great. Okay. There's a name you can give you in equatable wrestler. Correct. That's my fear. Cause while I thought the match was good, and again, I think this is a work in progress. And I think to answer your question, I think he is being slotted for that G1 spot, and he is being slotted for New Japan Cup. Now they could always call an audible and be like, not yet. I don't know. We got a little more work to do, but, I feel like that's his trajectory. I just, something's missing. I don't know if that's like you put that in the charisma folder or the, emotion folder or what it is. But, and I think Osaka's a tough fucking crowd. Let's be honest, right? It's not like, you know, he's in front of a crowd that will just clap to anything because it's the, you know, it's not like New Japan is a regular in their city. And especially a singles match. Osaka's a tough crowd, right? I think Osaka was just like, okay, pretty quiet. I think he could hear crickets. And again, I think that can be fixed. Give him a little sandpaper, give him a little edge, I don't know what it is. But right now it's a work in progress. And I'm comfortable with that. I think he has the physical tools to be able to kind of still work on the other stuff. And the physical stuff will get him through for the short term. But that has to be something that he has to be aware of and the company aware of. And we need to get him to the other side.
But I think it's also important that we discuss the result here, because him getting a clean win over Shingo, I think speaks a lot about what the company see with him. You know, this wasn't the, guy's just moved up to heavyweight and is facing an experienced guy and, you know, narrow competitive defeat. He won, right? He beat Shingo clean. And that, to me, indicates that the company are probably quite high on him with this transition to heavyweight.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get plenty of dance partners that are high quality. Like the days of farting around with, you know, trying. Again, it's not the physical stuff. It's not the in-ring stuff that I'm concerned with. It's just kind of finding his groove and finding his mark of, okay, so where does he fit in with all this? And how is he connecting with the crowd, whether it be in a baby face way or heel mannerisms. I just don't want him to be stuck in the middle of the card. And that can easily happen if that doesn't improve. And but again, I'm not saying it can't be. I'm not saying this is a lost cause, because there's so much plus side on the other side, the physical stuff, that again, we'll just develop that and that'll kind of be a little bit more organic to, you know, get him to the other side. He'll get wins. They're going to push him. Let's just see if he can put it all together.
Third match was a special singles match where Great Okan defeated Shota Umino, 9 minutes 38 seconds with that eliminator. How about this? Wow. I mean, what a performance from Great Okan. This is exactly what I want to see from Great Okan. He just looked like a nasty, vicious bully and dominated, for want of a better word. It's absolutely manhandled Shota Umino and came out of this looking brilliant. And I think we do have to give a little bit of credit to Shota for making Great Okan look good. I know we're doing the big Shota dog part at the moment, but he managed to emphasize and accentuate all the things that Great Okan is good at. And, you know, the build up to this match has been fantastic, and all the interviews and everything that Great Okan has said, all those, you know, truth bombs that have nuked Shota. And he's like a kind of mirror that you hold up to a wrestler, and it exposes all their flaws and insecurities and hypocrisies. So whilst a lot of people are going to come away from this thinking, Shota, what a geek, I think I have to acknowledge that this is kind of genius booking, really, because I thought the match was really good, and I thought Shota made Great Okan look great, and then the bit at the end with the hair cutting was expertly done. So Shota's resisting him. You think, is he just going to like fight him off and we're supposed to cheer for that? But no, when he snatched the clippers out of his hands, and I just realized what was going to happen then. I was like, we're doing it. And the symbolism of him shaving his own head is significant, right? Yeah. This is him stripping away everything and going back to basics. Now, what I really want to see here is him going back to full Young Lion. Black trunks, shaved head, undercards, and having to build that connection with the audience again from nothing. I don't know if they're going to go that far, but I'm quite excited by this. I hate to say it, you know, and I absolutely threw Shota under the bus last week, but this was executed to perfection. So come out of this thinking, yay, Great Okan, he's awesome. And also, I'm quite interested to see what we do next with Shota.
Yep, and you could hear the crowd. So, you know, after this is all done and, you know, Okan's now fucking stand up on top of him. And you know, Shota's like, I'm done. Like mentally, physically, I'm just a shell of a human being. And then, you know, here come the clippers and all, and he grabs it. And again, this is not anything that is strange for those who have followed Japanese pro wrestling for a while. Whipping out the old Chigusa Nagayo spots here with Dump Matsumoto. But this is kind of that let's go to Mexico thing. This is that clean slate thing. This is that new coat of paint thing. And the fact that he did that and said, nope, I'm doing it, I'm cutting it, and then walking out crestfallen and just at the end of his fucking rope, you heard the crowd.
There's a great screenshot, David, when he's cutting the hair and there's Great O'Conn in the background. And have you seen that meme with the guy peering in through the window saying, like, ha ha, yes, sickos?
Yeah.
That's exactly the face that Great O'Conn is pulling. I'm going to send it to you. It's just the camera work, like, in general in this show, was impeccable. And this was just one. I just wanted to jump in and say that. Seek it out, listeners, if you've not seen it. Maybe I'll tweet it out.
Okay. I got it. Yeah, that's pretty much right. It's pretty spot on. Yeah, that was a great spot. A great shot, camera work wise as well. Yeah, send that out. Yeah, him cutting the hair, you know, kind of saying, okay, I got to, I'm at the end of my rope. So what does that mean? That means that they A, recognized the problem, B, said, okay, let's change it. Now, what C might be changed to what, we don't know, but at least, at the very least, like I said, what that did was it made him vulnerable. And it made him a little bit in the eyes, especially of the live audience, of, okay, we can get behind you. We see what you did here. And, you know, just for a moment or two, we got your back. You know, don't fuck it up, but we got you. And I loved it. I really did. I thought that was really great. Again, whether this could be pulled off, whether this can be fixed, whether he's the right one, these are all questions that are going to be answered, you know, in the long term, right? And when we do the career retrospective, I'm sure these are the conversations that we'll reference to early in his career. But know that this is a flag that's being planted of, okay, we need to pivot. We need something new. And what that is, what he's got up his sleeve, maybe it's something creative. Maybe it's something that we didn't even expect. Maybe it's something where he'll be comfortable in his own shoes. I hope so. Because here's the thing. At the end of the day, I truly believe that he is a talented pro wrestler. I just think that right now he is just lost. He is lost, whether that be – and his confidence is shot and all of that. And I will also say this. It could have been very easy for New Japan to be like, you know what? We got to wipe our hands of this fucking shit because this ain't working. And we've given you a lot of opportunities and all that stuff. But New Japan, whether that – and again, I'm counting it as a plus, and some people might count it as a negative. There might even be people in the company to be like, oh, another fucking shot. Okay, how many more are you going to get? Because I only got one, right? I can hear those. I can almost see those DMs and texts coming, and I think that's valid. But I'm going to give Shota some grace, and I'm going to give New Japan some grace, and say, okay, they got a plan B or C or D or whatever we're at now, and at least they're not giving up on the dude, because I think, and I think a lot of people would agree that there is something there. The current version isn't there. Let's see what these changes give. And then we can make a decision of, okay. Because, again, I know that people kind of, some of them are on board, some of them hand-wave the idea of the Naito comparisons, and I understand why and all that stuff. But it's amazing what Osaka is, right? It's amazing what Osaka can do to a career. Whether at the time you think it's a positive, a lot of times it turns into a positive. So let's say.
Yeah, I thought that. I said while watching, it was very reminiscent of the, was it the Naito Ishii match from
Ishii or Fale or something? Yeah.
I think it was, Ishii in like 2014 or something. And this was just before he went and did his sort of mini excursion to Mexico.
Yeah.
Where he was supposed to be wrestling as the babyface and the crowd were just shitting on him. And then he started to lean into that. And I think the crowd reactions were quite telling here, because it was different to the last time he was in Osaka, where there was, what was he was wrestling Sanada at the time, and there was kind of a warm reception for him. They were like, okay, you are fine as a mid-card, and we accept you as that. But then when he came out to challenge Zach, they were like, no, this is not your lane. Get back in your lane. But here, it was just outright rejection. They were booing him all the way through. They were like, no, we don't want you at all. This current iteration of Shota Umino, wherever you are on the card, no thanks.
And then by the end of the match, though, you heard the cheers for him. And again, it wasn't like a rousing, you know, tear the house down. They were just on his side. But you did hear that. You did hear, like, the crowd kind of just like, okay. Okay. We're
the cleansing flames of rebirth of the Osaka crowd.
I mean, that's a perfect job by whoever mapped that out to say, let's do it here. It is one of those magical locations when it comes to this company and pro wrestling in general. So
I would love to know how far that was planned out. Like, do you think this was this moment of him losing to Great Okan and shaving his head was planned before Wrestle Kingdom or after?
After. Because if Wrestle Kingdom he proved everyone wrong, I don't think this would be even the match that he would have had. No, I think Wrestle Kingdom was kind of like the realization, and especially the company, of, okay, we can't continue down this path. Because not only is it not working from a, you know, product perspective, like it could do irreversible harm to this guy and his career as a pro wrestler in this company. So they kind of had to do something, and they were smart, and they did it. And this is the first seed of that. No, I listen. You mean to tell me people aren't like, okay, I want to see what happens next with this dude? And at no point was anyone saying that prior to the end of this match. No one. I like it. They did the right thing again, which, quite honestly, was shocking, but they did the right thing again.
Can't say the same for the fourth match, special singles match, where Sanada, or Neo Yujiro, as I'm now going to refer to him, defeated Taichi in 8 minutes 35 seconds after deadfall. Sanada's outfit, man, just absolutely preposterous. He looked really like a rejected persona video game concept art that was deemed too wacky by the developers. Someone pitched that and they're like, no, this is too weird, even for our game. No thanks. Yeah. With all the speakers on his jacket. He just looks absolutely insane. The match was okay. I think all the things that I liked about the match were Taichi doing the literal and figurative heavy lifting and, you know, eliciting something from Sanada. I don't know. I'm done with Sanada. There is no storyline, there is no coat of paint, there is no push, there is no opponent that's going to make me give a shit, because we've seen his ceiling and we know what it is, we know who he is. And it just left me wondering more about Taichi, who I think there is value for him staying in New Japan as that gatekeeper, but I want to see him facing guys like Tsuji and Gabe Kidd and Uemura and Oiwa and Bolton. I don't want to see him against guys like Sanada. I don't see the value there. And if not, he would be very successful, I think, going over to Noah or All Japan. And I would watch those products. That's someone asked ages ago, what would it take for me to watch those? Taichi going over and becoming a main event player in those companies would make me watch that, because I love Taichi and he's so incredibly talented, but the company don't seem to see it that way. And yeah, Sanada getting a little win here. What does that mean? Oh, I don't give a shit.
I mean, look, they. Speaking of guys who have gotten multiple opportunities with this company, Sanada isn't it for me. The jacket was, I kind of went back and forth on this is preposterously great and preposterously terrible. I think I landed on preposterously great. I think the jacket was just so fucking over the top. It was like, no, it reminded me of like, I want to say like Crash Bandicoot or something like that, like with those cartoony like it was just out of control.
Or like a Power Rangers monster or something like that.
Right. What happened to this company being a body company, man? I'll say it again. Like,
what is it with you and the bodies, man? That truly unhinged analysis of Despy versus Fujita last week. And now, what? Okay, go on. Whose body has upset you this time?
Well, okay. So first of all, I think Tai Chi, he's got himself a little paunch, right? Oh, go back God. And watch. Go back and watch. That belly is hanging over the belt line. I'm telling you. And two, Sonata doesn't have any fucking definition. Like, everybody just looks a little bloated. Again, this is me talking, mind you. But everybody just looks a little bloated. I don't know. Look, take this for what it's worth. But at least they got a little bit of steam. I don't know, did they? When it comes to just five guys. Four guys. How many other guys are in this fucking thing? Look. I would love to see... I don't know what happened with Tai Chi. I don't know. He pissed somebody off. There's just not enough room. I don't know. I don't know. But I just feel like that's a guy that has plenty of value that I just don't think the company has anything for him. And yeah, I would like to see him kind of move on. I think it'd be best for everyone. Sonata is Sonata. And look, if he wants to stick around in the middle of the car, that's great. I don't care what you do to the guy. He's just Sonata. And that's it. I mean, what else can you say with a guy that feels like it really hasn't been that long, but he feels like this dude has been with this company for 400 years. And I'm just... I don't know. I don't know what else we do with the guy. I don't know if we're heating him up for cups and G1s. Is it worth it? I feel like we have a lot of people that could take that spot and be 1,000 times better.
Was this where Yuya came back?
Yeah.
Was it after this match?
Yeah, wasn't it? Was it this match?
Yeah, okay, I think it was. So maybe they're just setting Sonata up for Yuya to knock him out in the first round of the cup. Because Yuya came back and that was great. We all like that.
We did. We definitely did. I'm kind of shocked that it's that's the faction, but okay, I'm sure they have a story to tell, and you know they'll make that connection even more solid, and we'll see. We'll see. I mean, look, if we're ranking factions, which we love to do here, I can't sit here and tell you that just five guys. I mean, is it even a thing? I guess it is. Whatever.
Fifth match, IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. Ichiban Sweet Boys, Kosei Fujita and Robbie Eagles defeated the challengers, Roppongi Revice, Rocky Romero and Yo. So Kosei Fujita pinned Rocky after 11 minutes 43 seconds following the abandoned hope. I will admit that whilst I was watching this match, I was sort of getting ready for work.
Come on.
So I wasn't giving it my full attention. It looked quite good. I shit myself a bit when Robbie Eagles smashed into the barricades because I've spoken before, every time that a guy does a tope or flip or whatever and there are barricades there, then I get TK Orion flashbacks and he crashed into that and I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, God. He's broken both of his legs. But he seemed to be okay, so fingers crossed it's nothing serious. And a nice win for Ichiban Sweet Boys. Don't think there was ever really any danger of Rocky and Yo winning. Am I missing anything here?
I did think of you on that spot where he smashed his fucking shins against the rail. You're right. Because previous to that, it looked like he messed up his arm or his shoulder. Like, it looked like he may have gotten, like, a stinger or something. And, like, he wasn't, like, holding his arm right, it looked like. I could be dead wrong, but it didn't look like he hurt something. And then he did that. And I was like, oh, God, he's dead. Like, I'm not one that will text or message any wrestler that has been in contact with us at any point. But I don't think it's any secret that Robbie is a listener and appreciates what we have and all that. But he also appreciates other.
I think you've got us mixed up with We Work Stiff.
It's not true. Come on. and again, I'm sure you know he has a probably even better relationship there. I mean, they're nicer people than us. That's for fucking sure. I did want to fire off a little text and be like, everything good, dude? I just want to make sure everything's all right. That looked fucking deadly. But yeah, like I said, he looked like he turned out all right. But he might have gotten to the back and been like, oh, my fucking leg. I feel like I saw it off. And I will say the second half of this match was very good. Very good. And as much as we bust, and here's the thing too, commentating the booth, they even made mention of Rocky kind of politicking his way in to a lot of scenarios. I did giggle at that. I did giggle at that. But all kidding aside, with the Rocky with the book and political maneuverings, I thought the match was really good. And again, the second half I thought was fantastic. So I liked the result. I don't think there was any chance that they were losing those titles, but I was a little worried about Robbie there for a moment or two, but yeah, I thought it was a solid match, good title defense, and on we go. That was one of the few matches, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joel, there was no setup of a challenger, correct? Oh, no, there was. Ishimori came out, right?
And Robbie versus Robbie.
It was funny because you could tell in the commentary that, well, just when he got on the mic, he was like, in Japanese, I don't speak Japanese, but about, he was going on, and then he mentioned Robbie, and he's like, well, you're your Robbie too, but it's this one is Robbie. I thought that was pretty hilarious. All right, cool. Not bad.
One thing I forgot to mention when we're discussing New Year, one thing I really love about New Japan is when guys are doing a run-in or making a save or something, they don't play their entrance music.
Yes.
Because I like the process that your brain goes through when...
Who's this?
Sometimes you see the person running first and then your brain is trying to unpick it and figure out, oh, who's that? And you're trying to recognize them and your brain's trying to piece together bits of information like who was out, who makes sense to be running in as they're getting closer and they're, oh, it's this person. Or you'll hear the squeal of the crowd first. You'll be like, oh, something's happening, and then see someone's running in and then... I just like the way my brain sort of tries to piece together that information, and there's kind of like a layering of the excitement rather than in other companies where like the entrance music plays and their name is flashing on the screen in massive letters and you're like, oh, okay, it's this guy.
Yeah. I hate that, actually. I'm glad you brought that up because I fucking actively despise that element of pro wrestling of, oh, it's a surprise. Well, it can't be that much of a surprise because they brought themselves either A, their own video package, or B, somebody made them a video package. Right. I like the idea of that. And you're right, that organic of kind of like, well, little rumblings, and then, oh, it's him. Oh, it's him. And then you could hear it kind of passing around the arena, with people, just kind of tell, oh, no, that's Bubba. And then it gets bigger and bigger. I do like that a lot. Yes. I hate the idea of an entrance music hitting. And then that's how you discover. So yes, I'm in full agreement.
Sixth match, NEVER Openweight Championship. Konosuke Takeshita successfully defending his third defense against the challenger Oleg Bolton. 11:33, raging fire. Yeah, this was fucking great.
Yep.
Maybe Oleg's best match so far, and just very smart wrestling. Like Takeshita is such an intelligent wrestler and does so much in laying out matches and structuring them and pacing them to make his opponents look good. He made Oleg look like an absolute monster and then proceeded to beat that monster. And it's, classic pro wrestling wisdom that to make yourself look good, you've got to make your opponent look good as well. But I just thought he did everything right and structured this match perfectly to accentuate all of Oleg Bolton's strength and get the crowd behind him and build up some believable near falls. And I just came away from this thinking, yep, Oleg lost that, but he's a made man. Like, he's a star. He's going to be great. And Takeshita, brilliant as well, made himself look, even though he sort of lost the power battle, the muscular battle, he used his sort of brains and his technique to get the win in the end. And just fantastic pro wrestling. Yeah, 11 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Very neat and tidy, in and out. I thought this was better than both of his Tokyo Dome matches.
Agreed.
And it's just great stuff.
Yep, agreed. 1,000%. We talk a lot about dance partners, and to have that be his dance partner is pretty smart thinking, because what a fucking pro wrestler. To be able to, just like you said, highlight his strengths, pardon the pun, and I wouldn't say completely eliminate his weaknesses, but it was kept to a minimum, and the crowd ate it up, and the crowd was into it. And just, first of all, what a fucking ox that guy is, Bolton. I'm just amazed at just some of the physical things that he can do. That said, again, a work in progress, but this was, you know, this was ECW masterclass, you know, highlight the positives, hide the negatives. Do I think that he could have that type of match with just anyone? Like, if you put fucking Sonata in the ring with him, would we get the same results? Maybe not. Maybe not. But that's okay. That's okay. Because that's pro wrestling, right? You have guys that can help you get from point A to point B and point B to point C.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
We've seen that through the history of time. I mean, fucking Ric Flair made a career out of that. He has a ton of talent. It does feel a little bit raw, but like if we continue down that same path of, again, strength, power, muscle, you know, and kind of work around that, we could have some fun here. We could have some fun. And it's only going to get better. I would like to see more with guys of that talent level in the ring with him, because I think it might be needed, because I think people might be disappointed if not. But I think there's a certain time, and that might be 6 months from now, 8 months from now, a year from now, where he's the guy that's dictating the pace and dictating the flow of a match and kind of working around that with a guy that you might not trust 100% to be able to carry the load, so to speak. But I think 6 months, 8 months, a year from now, we might be really impressed, because the raw elements are so there that, again, we just need to put it all together, and that's going to come with time. But holy fuck, what a blue chipper we have. Now, what it reminds me of, not to bring it back to football, American style, but the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, Joel, have a offensive lineman who never played professional football in his life. Not even play college football. He didn't play high school football. He grew up in, I think he grew up in New Zealand, and then he played in New Zealand maybe, or it might have been Australia. Anyway, he played rugby, right? And they saw so much potential in this dude that the NFL has a program to kind of help like guys who played rugby, or maybe even Australian rules football, or a European rugby league or something like that, to kind of say, okay, this is American football. We're just going to run you through the paces of some tests, and boom, okay, well, you have the physical tools. We can show you what to do when we think there's something here. Well, long and short of it, Joel, is the guy is a fucking all-star. He's one of the best offensive linemen in the fucking league, and the guy never played the sport, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, what have you. And I think that's what we have here. And I really do. I feel like this is the kind of blue chipper that we have. It's going to take a little time. It's not going to be tomorrow. But if you're patient with the dude, I think you have an absolute fucking stud.
And we had Yohei Oiwa coming out to challenge afterwards. So very exciting to see that one. And just, again, exactly what we want to be seeing from this company, seeing guys like Oiwa and Uemura, and, you know, to some extent, Great Okan doing interesting stuff with Shota Umino. We've got Gabe Kidd. We've got Yota Tsuji front and center. Takeshita, Oleg Bolton. It's a very exciting time.
We're in good shape, man.
Yeah, we are. And Fujita. I can forget him as well. Right. Anyway, let's move on to talk about the seventh match, the IWGP Tag Team Championships, where Hiromu Takahashi and Tetsuya Naito defeated the champions, the Young Bucks, Nicholas and Matthew Jackson. And I loved their Glico outfits. That was brilliant with the sort of Osaka thing on the Dotonbori? I think it's Dotonbori. I'm not mixing it up with the similar location in the Yakuza games, I hope. But yeah, the outfits were very, very cool. I also love Walker Strick. Clearly couldn't tell the difference between Nick and Matt Jackson. It was just like, oh, there goes Jackson. I'll give you a point, right? Nick Jackson is the one with a massive forehead. Right. So that's how to tell them apart.
And Michael Jackson is the one who moonwalks. He has a glove. Just in case you need to know of that one. Okay, good. All right, next.
And there's a Chelsea footballer called Nicholas Jackson as well.
So is that right?
A lot of Nicholas Jacksons about, yeah. Yeah, this match was it was funny. It was entertaining.
Okay.
I like the strategy they've got around working around the fact that Naito is absolutely cooked by basically having the Young Bucks do moves on themselves.
Right, they're really good.
I thought the Young Bucks were really good in this match. They were great. But it was like Hiromu and the Bucks doing all the heavy lifting, and like I know it was part of that. Oh look, it's a tag team move, but Hiromu literally boosting, giving Naito a leg up, boosting him to do the tornado DDT. And then you could see Jackson, whichever one it was, taking the destino at the end, like with a look of pure focus and concentration, like, don't drop this guy, don't fuck it up, because there was one earlier in the match which looked absolutely horrendous. So, yeah, I mean, I can't fault the booking. It's a good way to hide Naito while he's in this terrible shape at the moment. And Young Bucks really good. You know, I've enjoyed this little stint. If this is the end of it, well, I appreciate them coming over. I've missed them. They're a tremendous tag team. Yeah, fun match.
Yep. I would, truth be told, I would welcome them back with open arms. I know that they were talking about, you know, we'll be back, Osaka, you know, all that stuff. I hope so, because I think it's a positive having them in the mix. Because you could see in this match that they did have to do a lot of heavy lifting when it came to bumps and creative moves and, you know, kind of getting out of there alive, quite frankly. Hiromu was a little buzzsaw doing his cross bodies around the ring.
That was very funny.
I thought that was pretty good. And again, I like the idea of them holding the tag titles. And I've said it before, all the positives and the reasons why. But just a bullet point, we're talking about Hiromu making a transition to heavyweights. It sounded like he was talking about that as well. That's a great way to do that in a tag environment, right? He's got the big boy tag belts. Naito can not have to work singles matches, which I think at right now, it's good to have him in the mix, because he absolutely is still to this day a cornerstone in the promotion, and the fans love him, and I think he's important to the company to be there. And again, you can kind of hide some things right now that need to be hid. Once again, I would be thrilled if we never saw another Destino in our lives. Just
do the Tendedero.
Tendedero.
The Tendedero Diamond. It's the perfect finishing move.
Well, yes. Yes, it is. And probably a lot less stress on the body. And look, it's sad because I don't want to sit here and be like, well, he's cucked. Well, okay. I mean, what are you going to do? He's not the same guy that he was. And there's no point in you know, just beating that dead horse. But I will say that
it still has value. There's still value.
Absolutely. Yep. There's value there. And I will also say that, you know, This is the second example of the guys that we grew up watching, you know, physically past their prime. And that's just a depressing thing. I don't want to see him do another Destino, because I don't want to have to talk about another fucked up Destino, because the guy doesn't deserve it. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't, you know, he's done so much more for the company, for New Japan, for pro wrestling. And he's the reason why he can't do that move, people, is because he's absolutely sacrificed his body so that he could hit it the 5 million other times that he did. So look, let's give him the tag belts, keep him in the mix, and maybe take a little load off of him so that we can have him around, because there absolutely is value there.
Oh, I need to take a deep breath here. Eighth match. IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship. Yota Tsuji, the champion, and Gabe Kidd, the challenger, going to a 21-minute, 24-second double knockout. Man. Man alive. Gabe, right, let's talk. Let me talk about Gabe Kidd for a long time. I just really like his vibe, his aura. It's kind of like his entrance feels more like an MMA entrance or a boxing entrance than it does a wrestling entrance. And I love having Clark Connors ringside, his hype man, doing like the big hugs at the start, psyching him up. And I noticed Clark was standing on his chair for half the match, which was tremendous. But just the whole buzz around seeing Gabe Kidd come out, you just feel like you're about to see something real, not something rehearsed where it's been choreographed to within an inch of its life, but you feel like you're about to watch a prize fight rather than a pro wrestling match. And then Tsuji's entrance as well, he's got that aura too. It's a different kind of aura, but I just don't know how Tsuji has managed to pull off that look, like the Carmen San Diego red Undertaker Tatanka the tassels look. Like, it's absurd that he's managed to make it work. And the pop from the crowd when he took off the robe and revealed that he was wearing trunks. I mean, what a glow up that is. The boy's got some nice pins. And the start of the match was brilliant. I loved the face-off. There was a little touch here when they faced off when Tsuji was holding the belt. And he nearly had the belt on the wrong side, like in front of the camera, and then he just switched it over the other side so it wasn't blocking their faces. Just it was that's a little touch. I was like, oh yes, yeah, okay, he's getting it now. And yeah, the when they had the face off, the crowd dueling chants, like so often that can come across as really hokey, and especially if the crowd don't really respond to it. But it was just impeccably done here. So the face off, the dueling chants, slap each other in the face, back to the corner. Off we go for a collar and elbow tap. I was just electrified at that point. They had me by the balls. And two men, they know the significance of what they're doing right now and the era in which they're doing it and all the departures and all the pressure and the questions about New Japan and, you know, where they are compared to where they were and all the doubt about the promotion and are they able to, you know, get back to their glory years. So there's all that pressure on them, all that weight of expectation. Like we talked about last week, Damon, was that like they have to deliver here. They absolutely have to. Because I think they know what the company need from them and what the fans, what we need from them as well. And it's that situation, like when you get a lump of coal and you put it under intense pressure, it's either going to crumble into dust, show to Umino, or it's going to turn into a diamond. And I think we're just looking at two absolute diamonds here. And just I was every minute of this match I was hooked. Like the symbolism of him picking up the chair and then ditching it, a little bit heavy-handed, going, I don't need this, like okay, right, we get it, but you know, it's pro wrestling, so I'll allow it. And just the way he carries himself, Gabe Kidd, with that, he's just toned it back, he's dialed it back and has tapped into this kind of cold this aura of cold-blooded, menacing, unpredictable violence. And I said years ago that he's the real Shibata successor, and I stand by that now. I think that's really looking like the truth now. We're looking at the truth, and Gabe's got magical crowd connection here. He just vibes off of the crowd perfectly. It's not like he's got in his mind, okay, this is how I'm going to do the match. I'm going to do this after 1 minute, and then this move, and then this move, and this move. It's like he's feeling the crowd and responding to them, and they're responding to him, and it just all feels really organic. And I think that's one of the biggest improvements in Gabe Kidd's game, that just the pacing and knowing when to stop, when to let things breathe, to build up to those crescendos of violence. So it's like more like a roller coaster with all these sort of peaks and troughs rather than what he used to do, which was sort of going at 100 miles an hour for 20 minutes and it all ends up feeling a bit samey. And, you know, dare I say it, he's got, you know, the in-ring promos, he's got a touch of that US wrestling theatricality, sort of playing it to the back rows. But, you know, it's okay. I don't mind that because it's all part of the bigger narrative. And that slap exchange they had early on, and they built that up and built it and built it and built it, expert craftsmanship to ultimately make Tsuji look like a killer when he just caved in Gabe's chest with that. And then the strike exchange with the kicks, I was just howling and clapping like a fucking seal. And Gabe, another thing I don't think he gets enough credit for is his selling. I thought his selling was amazing. You know, him sort of staggering and getting all glassy-eyed and just trying to sort of grit through the pain. I think he knows the value of building a long-term rival. And I think he sees that value in Yota Tsuji and knows that this is a guy that if they play their cards right, they're going to make a lot of money together, basically. And the whole match was just basically felt like a love letter to their time in the dojo. I can't think of another match that elicited quite so much drama from the crowd for a Boston Crab near fall. Like the crowd were losing their minds for that. And like I said last week, they're doing so much with like very little in terms of actual wrestling moves. If you sort of broke this match down into which wrestling moves were exchanged, there's not a whole lot there. But the whole thing is conducted with such like gritty brutality and a real edge that I think Yota Tsuji up to this point, he sometimes lacks that. It's sometimes, you know, that he's not quite landing with the strikes and it all looks a little bit kind of flashy without much substance to it. So it was great to see Gabe drawing that violence out of him. I don't know what the fuck they were going for with the top rope move, because the camera work, I said before, outstanding. Before they did that top rope spot, that low angle shot of them on the top turnbuckle with the ceiling lights, just tremendous stuff, which really enhanced the match. Then they were screaming at each other in Japanese for Walker to ruin it by dropping in a Pete Weber reference. I hear you, Walker Stewart. I know what you're up to. I popped. And just tremendous moments down the stretch. It was just all timed and executed to perfection, like the Gene Blast counting into the pile driver.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
And the Oni Neal review. So good, wasn't it? And when the camera zoomed in and he's pulling down the knee pad and you can see the Oni knee tattoo and it's like, oh, look, there's the Oni knee. And then bang, straight the Gene Blaster. And ultimately, a double count out, which, you know, I did throw out there as a possibility, not specifically a double count out, but some sort of non-finish. So, yeah, I was right again. But there's, I think, logic there, not so much in, you know, not wanting to have either guy take a loss, but to sow the seeds of what I think should be a generational long-term rivalry, that main events, big, like the biggest shows for New Japan Pro Wrestling for many years to come. And it was very much a match more about the performances than the result. You know, it was about what the match meant, not what the finish was. And just, just an absolute joy to watch these two young studs who understood the assignment perfectly. And nothing, you know, we're out of the Osprey mode of, you know, nothing outrageously flashy or fancy or intricate. And, you know, that's not a knock on Osprey, because I love Will Osprey matches and I still enjoy them. I think he's one of, if not the best wrestler on the planet. But this is so different to that, where every single move mattered and there's none of this bullshit like padding out the first 10 minutes with feeling each other out. We're not doing that anymore. It's 20 minutes, get in and get out. Do your stuff in 20 minutes. That is more than enough time. And this whole thing was just a passionate and earnest display of more than just the Global Heavyweight Championship, although it did wonders for that, you know, belt that I think has been booked brilliantly over the last year, I would say, but more than the title, this was a deep and violent and borderline psychotic conviction from both men of just how much this company means to them, to the thunderous approval of fans who are desperate for new heroes, and these guys taking pride in being New Japan wrestlers and just how ready they are to pick up that ball that others have dropped, either from leaving or fucking it up when they had their big chance. These guys are picking up that ball, taking the company into the future. And just really fitting that the match started with the dueling chance for the individual wrestlers, for Gabe and for Tsuji. But in the end, it was Shin Nihon chance ringing through the arena, which I suspect was deeply satisfying for the two wrestlers. The story they wanted to tell is exactly what they wanted. Segueing into exactly what we wanted, which was House of Torture. But before we get onto that, what did you think of the match?
I'm going to throw it out to everybody. Like, how you feeling? How you feeling after watching that? Like, how do you, like, where is your mind at? Because for me, there was an overwhelming sense of, we've got two guys that can do the things that make this promotion special. And I think that it was a concern for years of, do we have that level? Do we have that that type of physical and mental ability to pull something like that off. We do, right? I think back to after the Dome match, the Wrestle Dynasty match. And, you know, trust me, I don't think that anyone would think otherwise, but I feel like we gave Kenny Omega a lot of credit for that match. And the you know, having a match like that on a big stage in a big building, it's great to have a guy like Kenny Omega in the ring with you to help deliver, right? And once again, he did, and all the flowers to him. But we were also so excited about Gabe Kidd because we saw the year that he had, you know, and it kind of started in that cage match, and the violence there, and then all throughout the year, and then again he gets the vote of confidence from the company to have a match like that with Kenny Omega. But the question was always, okay, if Kenny Omega's, and I think back to like Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, and they both loved the match, but it felt like it was a one-sided love affair with Kenny Omega. It really did. And I was like, okay. And I agree, Kenny Omega is awesome. And Kenny Omega can make people better. He can. He has that talent. But, boy, Gabe really was holding his own. And to be quite honest with you, I felt like had a lot more pressure on him to perform than Kenny did, even though this was Kenny's first match back. You know what you're getting with Kenny Omega. You're getting greatness. And I think there were still, going into that Dome match, some question marks of, okay, what can Gabe bring to the table here? And he hit the fucking ball out of the park, right? Just, I use the analogy, a fucking ass whipping, a belt to asses. That's what he did. Excellent job. But we also had questions. I think those questions are erased. I don't think we can sit here on this show ever again and say, well, I'm a little worried, you know, does Gabe have this? If we had it before, that's done, right? I think we can put that to bed. I think we can put that to rest. Because what you have is a guy that, A, is able to connect with the crowd like very few can, and B, even if the crowd seems a little bit flat, trust me, he's going to raise it up. He's going to make you. He's going to make you get into it. He's going to make you get into it. From the ring entrances to, you know, everything. Again, I threw out a question. Is he just a brawler? Is that and once again, proven wrong. I thought the match was fucking fantastic. It had brawling elements. It had hard striking. It had brutal chops. There is one, I swear to God, we talk about Minoru Suzuki and his fucking chops and the shotgun element, and like Dragon Lee or something. Just that snap and pop and just like, oh, boy, there was one that just, and the crowd lit up on that one. I loved it. I felt like, holy shit, we've got two guys that can deliver on a consistent basis. We got two guys that are passionate about the company. We've got two guys that are passionate about pro wrestling, and we got two guys that are passionate about being the ones that help carry New Japan into the future. I don't think there's a better feeling. I really don't, because guess what? Everybody's at the ground floor on this. You're watching two guys, just grow and develop and become not only big names within this company, but big names in professional wrestling. I implore you, your friends that maybe have fallen out of love in recent years with New Japan, absolutely let them know that this match is there. Absolutely let them know that these two guys are it. And I'm not saying sit here and say things that you don't believe, but for anybody that's on the fence with New Japan, just, oh, please watch this match, because I really think that that's the type of match that, ooh, I got to check out next month's show, or I got to check out Gabe Kidd again, or I got to go back and rewatch some stuff, or whatever the case may be. And Yoda Tsuji too. You know, I'm sitting here talking about Gabe Kidd, but let's give Tsuji all the fucking flowers too. We're in good shape, Joel. And I'm so happy. Here's what I'm also, when I turn off that match, you know what my first fucking thought was, besides the Dave Meltzer thing of, boy, you better throw some fucking flowers at Gabe Kidd this time, or a little bit more. I thought of us and everything that we have gone through with this show, and the fact that there were times where, you know, sometimes watching this product was fucking chore, a fucking chore, and then having to get together and do a show. And there have been times where us getting together was really the sole reason. To hear your voice was the reason why I was doing that show that particular day. And I think, man, we have fucking crossed that bridge big time. We joke about, we're back. We're back. Ah, we're back, baby. I can confidently say that with those two, we're fucking back. Couldn't have been more excited. The finish. What are you going to do? Here's what I'll say. We're guaranteed a rematch. And that warms my heart. We're guaranteed a rematch. When that comes, I don't know. But we're guaranteed a rematch. And we're guaranteed a long-term feud that I don't think anyone's going to complain about.
So would this be a good time to bring up Evil making his return?
Sure, why not?
So looking forward to both these guys, the future of the company, having an extended feud with the house. I tell you, I was so distracted by the black t-shirts.
Me too.
That might be the best heel move he's ever pulled, yeah, because it just left me waiting for a swerve that never came.
Yep.
And I just imagine Evil backstage being like, how are we going to fuck with people this time? Let's wear plain black t-shirts,
yep,
to fuck with people. There are layers to this shit. I'm just in awe of just how much deep mastery there is over the craft here. So what happened? So Evil attacked Tsuji, and then Ren attacked Gabe. In the absence of David Finlay, which I think in and of itself is worthy of discussion, do you feel that's kind of shifted the War Dogs slightly down the heel face spectrum? Like, can we say War Dogs are tweeners now? Now, if we are doing a War Dogs versus House of Torture feud, you know what we can do again? Evil versus Sanada.
Yes! Yes!
So back.
So back, baby. I thought you were going to say Civil War. Remember Civil War?
Yes, this is it. We're doing it. We're doing the Civil War.
This is it.
It'll be good this time.
I think this is, you know, I think David Finlay's version of Bullet Club was his stamp, and the splintering off into other factions off of that. I don't know. Like, I feel like this is maybe one of those culmination points of Bullet Club, right? And if House of Torture is its own separate entity, wanting nothing to do with Bullet Club, and, you know, and all the other splinter groups kind of doing their own thing, I don't know. Maybe this is that final nail in the coffin when it comes to Bullet Club itself. I will warn you that free agent Anderson and Gallows might want a last run. We'll see. There's nothing.
Is it a part of you after the Naito Hiromu won the tag titles? Were you sort of sitting there sweating like, fuck, yep, please don't let Gallows and Anderson come out?
Yep. I sure was. As long as Rocky Romero has a cell phone, I'm worried. So yes, there is that. And I will also say that there might be other people that have expressed interest in New Japan Pro Wrestling that I'm sure was discussed on our Discord, if I'm not mistaken. And I won't spoil the surprise here. If you want to, by all means, I don't think anybody's going to be fucking doing cartwheels. But Rocky's cell phone still works. Let's put it that way. Rocky's cell phone still works. So Yeah. House of Torture is in the mix. I can't say I'm thrilled, but as the kids would say, let's see what happens.
Ninth match, main eventer, IWGP World Heavy Q, Senshiken. It's Hirooki Goto, the challenger, defeating the champion, Zack Sabre Jr. 20 minutes and 7 seconds, in and out, getting a business done in 20 minutes. None of this 40, none of this feeling each other out. Don't need that. It's bad. It's always bad. And man, I said last week, and I did believe it was the correct thing to have Goto winning, but he was laying it on so thick in the last few days with all these interviews about, you know, doing it for his father who passed away. I was just like, oh my God, he is just being so heavy-handed here. There is no way he's winning. He knows he's losing and he's just doing it because he gets some sort of sick, perverse pleasure in making us all look like clowns. There is a brilliant hype video from our friend Almot's Graps on Twitter. I've also put it on the Patreon for all subscribers, even the free tier, because it was really good. And I hope it doesn't get taken down. But watch that. That got me in the mood. Walker Stewart, outstanding here. That line at the start, he was talking about wrestling doesn't have an off season, so there's no ends, only new beginnings. While Goto is making his entrance, and I'm standing up, I'm clapping. Fantastic. Just got me buzzing. Chills. The chants. Goto! Goto! Never in my life have I heard that. The crowd wanted this so badly. And at that point, I knew we were on the right side of history. Zack Sabre Jr., the perfect foil. Just masterclass in, first of all, working over the arm. Just little things like using the Zack driver to then, as a setup to the arm bar. And like, Goto's trying to power out of it. And then as he collapses and the crowd realizes he can't power out of the armbar, there's just, like they know, oh, he's in trouble here.
And everything was getting locked up.
Where Red Shoes is like tapping him. I thought Red Shoes is calling it off because he said something and tapped him. I was like, oh, no, it's over. I can't believe it. And we've seen so many top guys submit to those maneuvers. Like, yeah, exactly like you said, Zach, just tying up each loose limb. First the right arm, then the left arm, then the right leg, then the left leg, just like he did to Tsuji in the G1 final. Just a brilliant near fall because everyone's thinking, well, he's absolutely done now, but managed to get out of it. Yota Tsuji in that G1 final, he wanted to live to fight another day. You know, he's thinking, well, I'd rather not get my arms and legs broken here. So I'll take this loss and then, you know, come back and fight again soon. But Goto, he knew it was his last chance. He's not getting another world title match. He'd rather have his arms broken than quit. And Zach was so good here. Like the slow burn submissions that build up and layer and crank up the pressure and the drama. Just a perfect complement to Goto's little hopeful bursts of power and aggression. And the battle of wills at the end over the wrist control. Little nods to his buddy Okada. I could have done without that, but I'll indulge Goto. You know, he can have that particular vice this time. And just this great story of Zach with the superior technique, but didn't have the heart. He didn't have the heart of Hirooki Goto. Goto wanted it more. It's basically the same as what happens every time Arsenal play against Newcastle. And I thought this was hands down Zach's best match of his reign. He was just the perfect opponent. He helped lay out the perfect match for what it needed to be. I just, the noises coming from the crowd then, like the noise for the Shoten Kai, the roof nearly blew off. And I feel that crowd went on a journey, as I did. I think they started off with hope, but at that point, they started believing. And in the final few minutes of the match, I just felt this wave of serenity wash over me. And I knew it was all going to be all right. I was thinking, of course he's going to win. There's no way he is not going to win. This is all just building perfectly to Goto winning. And it was just inconceivable to me that he wasn't going to win. And that GTR, the first and the second, just received by the fans like a goal at a cup final.
Yes.
I've not heard anything like that for years. Like probably since Naito hit that Stardust press at the Tokyo Dome in January 5th, rather, 2020. And he did it. He did it. So fuck all the doubters. I listen, all of you. I'm calling you all out. Voices of Wrestling, Keeping It Strong style. We Work Stiff. You all doubted. You're not allowed to enjoy this now. I'm gatekeeping you. You're going to stand outside.
Oh, no.
We're the ones We're the ones with our finger on the pulse. This one's for us. It's Russ Damon, the real ones who never gave up hope. And this is a victory for us, just as much as it is for Hiroki Goto. And then he brought his children out. I'll tell you a true story here. So at Christmas last year, both my children attend the school that I teach at, and we went on a trip to the church just over the road from the school to watch a Christmas show called the Dougie Doug Doug Show. So as we're walking in, I get pulled aside by one of the members of staff who's just sort of working on the show. And he says, would you be up for coming on the stage and just doing a little bit with us? You don't really need to do much, just a bit of fun. Just play along with it. Because you're the only adult man here. And that is true. Like all the other adults were women. So I was the only man there.
Really?
And I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. Like, it's fine. So what I had to do was there was a point in the show where I was called up on stage because they said, oh, we're looking for a hero. We need a superhero. Yeah, are there any heroes out there? So, I put my hands up and they're, yes, you, sir. Brought me to the stage and put on a Superman shirt and a cape.
Nice.
And like a sort of plastic, sort of Clark Kent style hair piece. And this kind of mask, this face piece that was operated a bit like a sort of a ventriloquist dummy. So the guy who was on stage with me was sort of operating it and making the lip, the mouth open and close. And they played a song, I Feel Pretty, Oh So Pretty. And so he was sort of making the mouth move as if I was singing to that. Well, I'm wearing the Superman costume. And then I had to sort of dance. Well, I didn't have to, but I thought, I might as well lean into it. And I was sort of dancing, getting into it and sort of prancing all over the stage.
You got a pro wrestling background. You know what to do.
And so my children right there in the front row, little Arthur right at the front, Esther a couple of rows back. And just the looks in their eyes were, I imagine, something akin to what Hiroki Goto's children were feeling in that moment when they saw their dad win the biggest prize in professional wrestling. So those two things, they're on par, right? They're on the same level. So I know how it feels, Damon.
So okay.
You help us put this win into context for Hiroki Goto.
All right. And non-insane people like yourself. Well, first of all, I cannot take any credit. I got on the bandwagon because you slapped the sense into me, and it sounded really fucking good. It sounded really good. Now, him coming to the ring, Hiroki Goto, and the crowd just wanted it, right? Zach was fantastic. The thing that will stand out to me is, again, that sequence of Goto's locked up. And every time he thinks he has an out, the ankle gets hooked. The other arm gets hooked. If there was an ear exposed, it was getting hooked. And him just crawling to the ropes. And at every time a loose limb got tied up, the crowd just gasps again, and then the roar gets louder, and then another fuck, come on, fight it out. And that went on for a good couple of minutes, and it was so fucking good. He finally gets to the ropes and the place is like, let's go. Fast forward, again, great job by both guys, but that closing stretch, and once again, Joel, you mentioned it, the angle of the camera, and they had to, for that pinfall, they had to somehow find a way to incorporate the crowd. And that shot of them in the background, of them being the crowd and in the ring and him hitting, getting the three and you see their mouths, the fans mouthing along the 1, 2, 3. And they're just like 1, 2. And it, when it hit three, people are on their feet. They're cheering. They're yelling. They're going batshit. And that, my friends, is pro wrestling gold. I jumped out of my fucking seat in my very office that I'm sitting in right now. And I was on my hand. And I just, my arms are in the air, fists clenched. And I had to stop and be like, whoa. I'm into it. But holy shit. Again, the running joke, the guy who always got close but couldn't cross the fucking finish line, right? The guy who, you know, he's really good, but man, if he was just in another era, if he was just at another time, he would be even bigger. But man, he just happened to be in a promotion that happened to have some of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time around him. And he just, again, he could touch the Intercontinental. He could have a little taste with the tag belts, all of that, but never the top prize. And for him to break through and get that moment and share it, I'm sorry, the kids were adorable. And I don't give a fuck what anybody says. I love them. And again, nobody's busting on the kids, but just the idea of, okay, we're a little heavy-handed on the family stuff. Okay, we're Ricky steamboating it to death. Got it. But fantastic, those kids. The one thing I noticed, did you notice when they were in the ring and he's on the mic and he would walk around the ring and the kids didn't stay in one spot? They kept the same distance in an imaginary circle around so that, again, dad could have his moment. Dad could have the spotlight. I'm not going to fucking step on the cord too. I was just amazed that these kids, like, they knew kind of to stay out of dad's way while he's cutting his fucking promo. Yoshihashi being in the corner, being the fucking friend of all friend. And even he knew, I'm going to take a powder outside in the corner and give him a spotlight. The confetti streamers going off and the kids, and he's holding the kid in his arm. Look, is this something that builds to the future of New Japan Pro Wrestling? Of course not. Is this something? But indirectly it could, because the next person who, you know, the person who beats him is going to be a guy who, you know, is going to get a nice little rub here. I let's put it this way. I don't expect fucking Yujiro to make a big comeback here and pick up a title. What a moment. And trust me, when he was locked in every one of those holds and climbing to the ropes, Joel, I'm going to be honest with you. I was like, well, that was fun, but this is New Japan Pro Wrestling, and we just don't do those type of things. And he gets to the ropes, and then I was like, oh my God, but maybe tonight they do. And it went. I couldn't believe it. I was in on it, and I felt so good that I let myself say, you know what, maybe there's a chance, and let's have some fun with it, and let's kind of get in that mode. And I'm sorry, I look forward to this match big time. And coming off the Gabe Tsuji match and then going into this, I was for it. And the fact that they delivered it, Kikuchi, you've done it again.
It was genius in retrospect, wasn't it?
Because sure was.
He built up all the buzz with that unlikely and possibly unplanned run to the New Japan Cup final because of the David Finlay injury, where we watched that New Japan Cup final and we thought, oh, hold up.
He's still got something in
tank. He's still got it, yeah. And then we had all those feel-good G1 wins where we brought the kids out the first time. And then we're all clamouring for him to make it out of the G1 block. And they said, no, you're not getting that. And then later in the year, we're all clamouring for him to win the white belt from Finlay. And they said, no, you're not getting that. You're getting fucking world champion Hirooki Goto. Fuck you. The tap on the shoulder that turned into a world title reign. And now Yuji Nagata is challenging. So the main event, we all predicted Hirooki Goto versus Yuji Nagata for the world title. Mm-hmm. So we've got that coming up. Show of the year. Show of the... I won't say decade. Show of the post-pandemic era. I can't think of a better show than this since 2020.
I'll say this: the last two matches made this show really fucking special for me. And there was plenty on the undercard that I got into as well. Again, there were some misses, but fine. I don't want to use recency bias as an influence on it, but I guarantee you that this will get votes at the end of the year. It has to. Because I don't know. I don't know anyone who could watch that show and be like, this product's not for me. I don't know. I can't believe
people will try. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the bad faith criticisms that are going to come out from this. It's going to be very enjoyable to me.
Well, listen, it's not the WWE title, so you know.
It's true. What would you? How would you rank your top three matches of the year so far? Because it's the top two here and Gabe Kenny, right? But yeah. In what order?
I liked this match. I liked Gabe Tsuji, Gabe Kenny, world title match.
So Zach Gotto is your number one.
No. No, I went the other way.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, right. So Gabe Kenny's first. Okay.
Well, Gabe Tsuji's first for me because.
Okay, Gabe Tsuji. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Because I love the fact that it was both those guys without, you know, any word of anybody carrying anybody, none of that nonsense. I thought it was spectacular, and it gave me so much confidence in the future that it's number one for me. And the match I thought was great. Two, Kenny and Gabe, because I thought the match was great. And three, this title match gave it. Once again, pro wrestling doesn't have to be the greatest match you've ever seen physically. It can have elements, and I feel like this match absolutely did have great pro wrestling. Don't get me wrong. But when you can get moments like this that tug at your heart and tug at your emotions and makes you get into it, like, that's rare. That does not fall from a fucking tree. That is a muse that hits once in a while, right? And it's hard to manufacture. And when it is manufactured, it comes off as hokey and kind of contrived and just all the things that you're like, this was genuine. And I think everyone felt it. And the fans having it there in that building in front of, you know, a ravenous pro wrestling, like, look, just A+ all the way fucking around on that. That's pro wrestling, man. That's why that's why we love pro wrestling. That is why we love pro wrestling. So I'm into it. Totally love it. He'll get a successful defense against Yuji Nagata, right? That's cool too. And then where it goes from there, hey, I'm assuming we're going to set up a youngster.
Whoa. Damon, you say successful defense.
Yeah.
You say successful defense against Yuji Nagata.
Yeah.
Hear me out, okay. Right?
Oh, no.
What if? No, I'm not doing it.
Look, one person's family is enough. We already had Nagata with his family before. By the way, his wife was, if I correct me if I'm wrong, she was a very attractive woman, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves me right. So very good. Excellent job all the way around. Perfect.
As Chris Samsa says in the chat, let's fucking Gotto.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. What a creative guy. All right. Where do you want to go next? Because I gotta be honest with you, I don't know if my heart can handle all this excitement.
There's only one thing left to say, Damon.
What's that?
We're so back. We're so back. And we'll be back next week. Have a good one.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.